Alabama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and TideSports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones, and Aaron Suttles is back with us today. Aaron, it's been a little bit. How are you doing?
I've missed this stale microphone. It feels good to be back.
Yeah, you were out sick.
That's been brutal, yeah.
Yeah, you've been out covering Deontay Wilder.
Yeah.
A lot going on with you lately.
Yeah, and I actually head back out this week to go to Brooklyn to cover Deontay Wilder. So,
what time's the fight? Board.
A little bit of a tease. I've got a surprise for people in that realm, and I'll unveil it on Twitter some point this weekend.
I'm excited to hear about this when we finish recording this. I'm sorry. It took me less than 30 seconds to ask Aaron what time.
You know, a lot of people have things that they're known for, and while I would probably rather be known for something else, there is a lot other worse things that could be known for, so I'll take it.
Yeah. The joke, of course, is that, like, in any normal circumstance, you would probably get a couple hundred people asking you what time the fight was. Yeah. Just anyway, just people who are genuinely curious. I think at this point, there are as many people who understand the joke, and they do it just to keep messing with you.
Yeah, they do. And it's sometimes, and I'm not a perfect person, sometimes I'm ill-tempered. I try to rein that in as much as possible, but on the rare occasions I am, it gets to me a little bit, but most of the time I take it as it's intended, which is, hey, let's poke fun at Aaron, and it's all in good fun.
Yeah. Aaron, of course, has the good fortune to not only be the beat writer for the Alabama football team and has covered five national championship games? Six national championship games? Yeah. But also our Deontay Wilder beat writer. So how many championship fights have you covered now?
Oh, goodness. All of the defenses. I was not there when he won the title, but I've been there at every defense. So five or six?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I covered him, obviously, in his amateur career and in the first couple of years of his professional career.
Yeah.
So
we're going to talk about football today, however. Since it's been a couple of weeks since we were on here, Alabama has firmed up its football coaching staff for the 2018 season. I'm going to run through the list here real quick. Mike Locksley has been promoted to offensive coordinator. He was the wide receivers coach last year. Dan Enos, hired from Michigan. He is the quarterback's coach and has the title of associate head coach. Joe Panunzio, who coached tight ends last year, is now the running back's coach, replacing Burton Burns. Burton Burns moves off the field and is now the assistant athletic director. Josh Gattis, who's been at Penn State for the last couple of years, was at Vanderbilt a couple of years before that with James Franklin, is the wide receivers coach. So Mike Locksley is no longer the overall wide receivers coach. Brent Key, I believe, is the only coach back from last year's staff with no changes to his title or position or responsibilities. Yep. He's the offensive line coach. Jeff Banks from Texas A&M is the tight ends and special teams coordinator. Tosh Lupoi is outside linebackers coach, and is co-defensive coordinator. He may have been co-defensive coordinator last year.
He was co-defensive coordinator last year.
Yeah, but obviously his responsibilities will be a little bit different now with Jeremy Pruitt gone. The presumption is that he's going to be the play caller and kind of the primary guy. Pete Golding is the inside linebackers coach. Craig Kuligowski, that's going to be a fun one to say.
Yeah, I haven't mastered that one yet.
Yeah, Kuligowski is the defensive line coach and the associate head coach. Carl Scott from Texas Tech is defensive backs coach. Scott Cochran returns as strength and conditioning coach, not technically an on-the-field coaching staff member, but usually gets included in that group anyway.
Yeah, I was going to play a fun little game. And if we could do this, if we had the technology to do it on the website, it'd be a fun game of match the coach's face with the new name.
And title.
Even I was thinking to myself, if Ben put me under the microscope right now and said, name all the assistant coaches, and I do this as my job, I might have a slight panic that I couldn't name all 10 of them. Because there's, eight? Is there seven new coaches? So the ones back from last year, Panunzio, Brent Key, and Tosh Lupoi, right? So that there's six new ones plus the 10th new assistant coach. There's seven new coaches? Is that right?
I think so. That's right. Yeah.
So
I'll count while you keep talking.
Yeah. So by my math, I think Joe Panunzio returns. His responsibility shifts, but he's back. Tosh Lupoi is back. And Brent Key is back. But I think other than that, there are seven new coaches. Am I missing anyone?
I've got six new coaches because Loxley's back, but just in a new position.
Loxley, you're right. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, so yeah. Six. So
I was curious about,
it's just massive, massive turnover for a staff that won the national championship. It's wild.
So you have a greater perspective on this, having covered Alabama a lot longer than I have. Has Nick Saban had this kind of turnover on his staff?
Not in one season that I can recall. This is massive. And part of it is that 10th new assistant. But even if you take that away, it's five new coaches. And that's just, you know, we've gotten accustomed here to Alabama losing their coordinators the last few years. Now it seems like they're just, they're losing staff members, assistant coaches. And it's just wild turnover. For a long time, Alabama had a pretty good core of guys that were going to stick with the program. Kirby Smart was here for, I believe, 9 years, eight as defensive coordinator. Burton Burns had been with Nick Saban all 11 years.
He was the last remaining
staffer. It's a bunch of new faces. I'm learning the names and responsibilities, and it's as much as I can ever remember.
Yeah, although if you go and look at it, in nearly every case, the assistants who've left in the last few years have moved up, have gone on to bigger and better things. Derek Ansley was the defensive backs coach for the last couple of years. He's now the defensive backs coach for the Oakland Raiders in the NFL. Mel Tucker, before him, is now defensive coordinator at Georgia. Kirby Smart, obviously head coach at Georgia. Jeremy Pruitt got a head coaching job. Billy Napier left for Arizona State for a year. He's got a head coaching job now. Mario Cristobal left for Oregon. He's got that as a head coaching job right now. They haven't just moved on. They've moved up, which is a good sign of Saban's ability to recruit and identify coaching talent as well.
Yeah, it makes him feel comfortable that he's identifying the right prospects, the right targets on who he wants. But this year, I feel like in the past, there have been visible, very evident connections with some of the guys that he chose to bring in. I think that's less the case this year. He had no first connection tie to Pete Golding. He had the Bo Davis tie. The Craig
Kuligowski,
he played for Saban in 1990, so there's a connection there. But where's the connection to Carl Scott? Where's the connection to Josh Gattis?
Mm-hmm. Dan Enos, I don't think there was a connection, although I think that there had been interest in hiring him before.
They wanted to hire him a couple years ago. A lot of fans maybe don't realize he had a non-compete when he was the Arkansas offensive coordinator, meaning
it's very unusual for coaches.
If an institution wanted to hire him as a head coach, I believe that would have been allowable in his contract, but he could not make a lateral move within the SEC. Mm-hmm. And so when Brett Bielema was fired and the Arkansas staff went and he left, I think, where did he go, to Michigan for a day?
Yeah, it was a week or 2 weeks, something.
Enough to void the language in that contract so he wasn't making an Arkansas to Alabama move.
Yeah.
And they were able to get he's a bright mind. He is very, very well thought of. Kirby Smart wanted to hire him at Georgia when he first got that job. If things had been different, I could see a scenario where Dan Enos was the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to keep Loxley and keep Loxley happy because he recruited well. And, in fact, I think recruiting is why Joe Panunzio is still on the field. I'll go ahead and take my medicine here and eat my crow that I reported last month, January, that Joe Panunzio was making a move off the field that turned out not to be correct. So we issued a correction in the Tuscaloosa News. But down the stretch, Joe Panunzio lands a couple of five stars for Alabama in recruiting. And the year wasn't bad, but it wasn't what we've seen from Alabama recruiting. So the fact that he closed as strongly as he did, especially getting Surtain in South Florida, I look at this staff and I think recruiting, recruiting, recruiting.
I want to take a quick step back here and talk a little bit more about Dan Enos. I think the first time that I was really aware of him or was aware of how highly he was thought of was at SEC Media Days a few years. Someone asked Brett Bielema about him, and Brett mentioned in his answer that he had a non-compete, and Brett felt very good about himself and let us all know that he felt very smart for having put a non-compete in his assistant coach's contract. He said he kind of stuck his tongue out at, I think it was Kirby Smart who wanted to hire him. He said he kind of stuck his tongue out at Kirby Smart and felt pretty good that, you know, you can't have my guy.
Yeah, and
Alabama wanted him, and Georgia wanted him both in the same offseason.
You don't see that a lot.
No.
One, I can't believe Danius would allow that to be in there unless they paid him above market value. Unless they're giving him some incentive, why would you limit your coaching opportunities in a very limited field as it is? That was bizarre. But also, I want to point out, remember a couple years ago when Austin Allen absolutely lit up Alabama's great defense? Danny Enos was your offensive coordinator there.
Yeah. Danny Enos also brings us to another point that I wanted to talk about. You mentioned that if circumstances were different, Enos might be the offensive coordinator on this team. He doesn't have that title. He does have the associate head coach title, which is probably just so that they can throw him a little bit more money. But I would assume that given the makeup of this staff, he will probably have a lot to say
no doubt,
in the
game planning. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what people ask, well, what is the difference between, let's say, Dan Enos and Michael Oxley in this particular situation? Play calling. And that's where an offensive coordinator really earns their money. I mean, when you with the game planning, you got a lot of you got your entire offensive staff, including analysts and all that, who's involved in the scouting process and watch film. They're all together putting together an offensive game plan. It's the play calling that really is what determines how good you are as an offensive coordinator. And we've got pretty good evidence on what kind of job Dan Enos does. I know less about Mike Loxley as an offensive coordinator.
Yeah. For all the talk about bringing a new assistant coach on the staff, the 10th assistant, something that Nick Saban had been pushing for a while, and one of the reasons why he had pushed for it was because he thought it would be good to have an assistant who could go out and work with the special teams. If you look at the makeup of this year's staff, it is exactly the same as what it's been the last few years, with the exception of Mike Loxley being moved to offense coordinator and not coaching a position. The other nine coaches on staff hold the same nine positions that the nine assistants did last year. So that's kind of what they've done with the 10th assistant, it looks like.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Alabama sent out a they finally addressed all their coaching staff changes, and they identified
roles.
We're
recording this on Monday, and they announced all of the hires, I think, on Thursday.
Yeah. So, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't Danny Enos going to coach quarterbacks?
Yes.
Now, traditionally in Alabama, the offensive coordinator has coached quarterbacks.
Yes.
And so that will be different. And but you're right. Everything else, still the same. They've still got the tight ends coach as, quote-unquote, your special teams coach across the board.
And Jeff Banks does have experience as a special teams coach. I believe when he was a college player, he was a kicker and punter way back when. So it's not as though they didn't bring a coach in with special teams experience. I would assume he would probably be more involved with the special teams than what the special teams coordinator has done in the last few years. But it's still interesting to see how different staffs are kind of shaking out with this new 10th assistant coach. I don't know if I've seen any coaching staff anywhere that has gone out and hired a dedicated special teams coordinator.
No, it's a waste.
See in the NFL.
Although Alabama fans might argue they want it, because I don't think they're over the end of regulation field goal in the national championship game. And we'll spare you on this particular episode. We won't talk about who's kicking field goals for Alabama in 2018.
Yeah, we'll have all summer to talk about that. You can look forward to it. That is six offensive assistants, if you're including Jeff Banks as being an offensive assistant with the tight ends, and four defensive assistants. Obviously, when Alabama breaks up into its position groups and does individual position drills, Nick Saban helps out with the defensive backs. You can also kind of break down the responsibilities with the graduate assistants in such a way that it kind of evens out the manpower a little bit. But I was interested to see that you do have six coaches on one side of the ball here.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Nick Saban, the head coach, he takes an active role in coaching the corner. So it's like you have – he calls himself the most expensive coaching assistant or grad assistant in the world. But we all know who runs that defense. So he'll be out there coaching corners, and Carl Scott will be coaching the safeties.
You mentioned that you didn't feel like you had a great idea of what Mike Loxley's offense was going to look like. Do you feel like you have any kind of an idea of what a Tosh Lupoy defense will look like?
Well, I don't know what Mike Loxley's like as a play caller. I don't imagine there'll be too much difference in what we see in terms of what Alabama runs offensively. I think Tosh is of the ilk of a Jeremy Pruitt. I think Tosh is more like Jeremy Pruitt than he is a Kirby Smart, and that is aggressive. Mm-hmm. And you look at him and the way he coaches his outside linebackers to what? To pass rush. I think it's going to be an aggressive defense. I don't think this is a personality or a guy that's meant or made to be passive. I think, and maybe that changes a little bit because we've discussed ad nauseum all the new faces we're going to see in the secondary next year, and how we'll see have to see how that plays out with the defense. But with some of the outside linebacker talent they have, and Anthony Jennings and Terrell Lewis, and et cetera, and Raekwon Davis is back. I think this is when I look at Tosh, I think aggressive.
Now, when you say more aggressive, obviously that means more pressure.
Right.
Does it also mean pressure coming from more places, like what you saw with Jeremy,
who was
a little bit more willing to blitz using
absolutely
defensive backs?
And they had to do that this past year because they didn't have a Jonathan Allen or a Dalvin Tomlinson or a Tim Williams or Ryan Anderson. And maybe they had one or two of those guys, but they didn't have them in the strength of numbers that they had in 2015. It's a great question because it depends on how fast these new faces in the secondary catch on, how much the coaches trust them. But I do think they're going to need it because I don't think the depth is going to be there again this year in the front seven in terms of getting pressure on the quarterback. So I think they're going to have to find different ways to get pressure.
What do you see as Pete Golding's role in game planning or in play calling with this defense? Because he's the guy who probably has the most play calling experience on the staff, with the exception of Nick Saban.
I think he's going to work closely with Tosh in that regard. He's been named the co-defensive coordinator, and he'll coach inside linebackers, what Jeremy coached last year.
Was not an inside linebackers coach
no.
at UT San Antonio.
He was a secondary. He's always been a secondary coach, from my understanding. Quite frankly, I don't know. I do think he came to Alabama with an expectation of taking the next step in his career. And that's why he's been named co-defensive coordinator. So I do think he'll work closely with Tosh, but what his role is and all that, it's just too soon to say.
He's a really bright guy. You and I both had the chance to talk to him briefly.
Young too.
Briefly during the post.
Confident. Is he's very confident.
If I was him, I'd be scared with the word
right.
I can't say on this podcast.
You know, from what I've been early reports of him, they love him on staff already. He's laid back. He's already fitting in. And to come in and be laid back around a Nick Saban coach football team, I think speaks to that confidence he has in himself. It's almost like I'm such an insecure person. I don't think I could do that. But to come back and be laid back, almost as like, I deserve to be here. I know I'm one of you guys.
Yeah. He did have a really exceptional defense at San Antonio this year. Last time I checked, I believe they had the best defense in Division I outside of the Power 5 conferences. Mm-hmm. So of the group of five conferences, they had the best defense in the country in terms of yards per game and points per game. They were 7th or 8th overall once you start factoring in some teams. But obviously there's a little bit of a talent gap when you have teams like Alabama playing against, Georgia.
Was it Marcus
Southern.
Davenport? Is that the guy he coached that was down at the Senior Bowl? I talked
I
to him.
Tell you.
He spoke very highly of of Pete. So he's not only a generally good X's and O guys, he's developed some guys too.
Yeah. Craig Kuligowski, we're perfect on that name so far in this podcast.
Yeah, that's what we're going with.
He has a great Twitter handle. Have you seen it?
It's Coach Coop? No, Coach Cool.
Yeah.
It's Cool, right?
Well, that's what his name is, but I think his Twitter handle is Let's Meet at the QB. Which for a defensive line coach is fantastic.
Now, you talk to people around the SEC who study the position, and they love him.
Mm-hmm.
They think he's bright. Now, I don't know what he's done in terms of recruiting, but he is very, very well thought of in terms of developing defensive linemen in the SEC, to the point where people who are paid to analyze the SEC and specifically look at the line of scrimmage point him out. Now, he's coached, Shane Ray, Sheldon Richardson at Missouri. Mm-hmm. He was there for 15 years, and you don't think about a ton of blue-chip talent going to Missouri, but I think he produced five first-round defensive linemen in 15 years. Pretty solid.
Yeah. Michael Sam as well was SEC Defensive Player of the Year. Carl Scott is the last new assistant on the defensive side of the ball. He comes from Texas Tech and had spent some time before that recruiting in Louisiana, which I was kind of curious about to see if that was kind of one of the aims of hiring him, was to try and get Alabama a little bit further into Louisiana.
Well, I'll tell you this. They know Louisiana is absolutely loaded in 2019.
Yeah, this year.
Loaded. So they wanted, and I think Mississippi's pretty good this year too. So they wanted a presence in those two states. Especially, and this is a topic for another day, this is a big year for Ed Orgeron in Louisiana.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Alabama did really well recruiting in Louisiana in the 2017 class. Got a couple guys out of there in the 2018 class, Slade Bolden, but not anyone really at the kind of the top of the food chain like you saw with Dylan Moses and Chris Allen and Fidarian Mathis. But the 2019 class is probably where you're going to see Ed Orgeron's future decided. If he can hold on to those guys, he'll have a chance at LSU. Obviously, there's the recruit and develop aspect of coaching. You know, recruiting is one thing, developing is another one. But if he loses out on some of these guys in this class, then LSU is going to be in trouble in the next few years.
Without question. It's a very, very important year for him. And I think Alabama is trying to kind of seize upon – they didn't have a great year last year on the field. There's some question marks, and if they can get in and make some inroads. And you pointed out they did – unbelievable a couple years ago in Louisiana. If they can get back to that and snag one of these guys that they really want, I think that's behind some of these recruiting decisions we've made in terms of assistant coaches.
Yeah. We haven't talked about Aaron had pneumonia a couple weeks
ago. Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. He's dying over here.
He's trying to hold on through the fourth quarter of this podcast. He's being a trooper. We haven't talked about Josh Gattis, the new wide receivers coach. Seems like another guy who will probably be a really strong recruiter on
the
staff.
From what we've seen already, he's had more of a presence on social media in his 2 weeks, month on staff than anyone I've ever seen under Saban. He gets that aspect of recruiting. And so he seems like a very aggressive guy. He was with the former Vanderbilt coach
James Franklin
at Penn State. James Franklin is known as one of the better recruiters in the country. He was on that staff. He comes very well thought of. And I think you look at him, you look at Pete Golden and Carl Scott and some of these guys, they're young.
Yeah.
It was almost like they made a conscious decision to not just bring in some new blood, but to get younger. And I don't know exactly what the mentality was with that. It seems like it's purposeful. Maybe it wasn't. But I look at these guys and they seem young. They seem energetic. And especially, as you mentioned, with Gattis, seems to connect with guys in terms of recruiting in the world of social media.
Yeah, when I think of James Franklin's staffs, both at Penn State and at Vanderbilt, I think of guys who tend to punch a little bit above their weight class in recruiting. You know, at Vanderbilt, they were certainly doing better than what you would expect a Vanderbilt staff to do recruiting-wise. At Penn State, however you want to rank them as a top 10 program or a top 20 program, they were always in the top 10 in recruiting in the last couple of seasons. And he was probably a big part of that. He's also done a good job developing some players. They've got a couple of wide receivers this year that will have a chance to be drafted in the NFL. Coach Jordan Matthews at Vanderbilt, who's had a very nice NFL career as well. He's a hire that I'm really interested to see what he can do kind of with Alabama's young group of wide receivers.
Yeah, because he's got a ton of talent at his disposal.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of weapons. And so you mentioned Jordan Matthews. He's a kid from Alabama who still, I believe, holds most of the major receiving records in the SEC. If Amari Cooper would have stayed his senior year, he would have broken all of them. But in terms of catches, career catches, all that, he's the guy that developed him as probably an under-the-radar prospect when he went to Vanderbilt. So, yeah, he's got Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs III, a lot of weapons. And depending how the quarterback situation goes, I'm not going to dip my toe in that water yet, although I think we all are probably on the same page.
We have many, many months.
There's going to be a quarterback that can get them the ball. It's going to be a fun offense to watch.
Now, you've already issued your mea culpa about Burton Burns and Joe Panunzio, so we can move past that. Beyond what you heard on your reporting, just how surprising is it to see Burton Burns moved off the field?
Absolutely shocked. I'll say this, you know, normally reporters don't stick to objectivity and don't get, really let their personal side into it. I like Burton Burns. I think he's a good man. I think he's a good football coach, and there are a lot of good football coaches. Burton Burns is a good man. I got to know him. I reported one of our game day stories on him. He is a fine human being. I hope that he was on board with this decision. I hope he got to make this because he's probably the best running backs coach in the country. I mean, look at the guys he's put in the NFL year in and year out, two Heisman Trophy winners that he's developed. I hope he had this say and he wasn't forced out. But I was absolutely floored. I heard about it a couple days before Alabama released it and was kind of just hoping to myself, well, maybe this is more kind of gossip, but it turned out to be true. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that Panunzio's ever coached running backs in his life. Maybe he hasn't. He's a football coach. He's a smart guy. I'm sure he knows the position. It won't take him long, but he's not going to be Burton Burns.
Yeah. I have meant to go look it up. Maybe I'll do it when we're done with this podcast. I don't know if there's another position coach out there in the country who has two Heisman Trophy winners. I'd be pretty certain there's not one.
Incredible.
With two and in the last 10 years.
Played the position, had his career derailed by an ACL injury when he went to Nebraska, which you wouldn't think nowadays that is something to derail your career, but back then in the 70s, that was a career ender. I mean, technology in that surgery has advanced light years, so I'm glad. If he wants the future in administration, happy for him.
Yeah. Joe Panunzio had been the tight ends coach for the last couple of seasons, like we said. Before that, he was not immediately. Before that, he was in the NFL, but previously he'd been in kind of an off-the-field role for Alabama. Burton Burns, maybe that move into the role as assistant athletic director is opened up a little bit by Bobby Williams, who's gone back to Oregon. Is that right?
He's going to Oregon as an on-the-field coach with Mario Cristobal. So yeah. I think it's the same position he's taken. I think they're calling it, what, associate athletic director for football?
Yeah, I think so. But it's been... That's a heck of a run for Burton Burns, the guy who's coached not only Derrick Henry and Mark Ingram,
had a runner-up, maybe not runner-up, but a finalist in Trent Richardson.
Trent Richardson, you know, coached Damian Harris to back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, Eddie Lacy, TJ Yeldon.
Glenn Coffey, yeah.
Yeah. Man, I feel like we should pour out a yellow hammer.
I'll have to give him a fist bump when I see him in the Malmore building.
Yeah. Scott Cochran, by the way, like we said, he's not one of the on-the-field coaches, but he is often kind of mentioned with the other full-time assistants, is on Twitter as of today. You can go find him at Coach Yeah.
What do you make of that? We were talking before the podcast. You think, I mean, a guy doesn't, after 11 seasons, just pop up. He was probably asked to do that, right?
Yeah, for, you know, recruiting.
I think it's recruiting, right? So,
yeah.
Alabama, what did they finish this year? Top 6, 7, something like that?
I think so, yeah.
And then they've just gone radical changes and just doing stuff they haven't done. God forbid they didn't finish number one for once.
Yeah. I think that just about covers it. We talked about every coach on the staff except for one Nick Saban. But
yeah, if you want to kind of conceptualize the massive coaching staff turnover that we saw this year, play a little game. Take out a sheet of paper and write down Alabama's 10 assistant coaches and see if you can do it.
Without going back and listening to the first 3 minutes of this podcast where I gave you the answer.
So do the 10, and then a little fun bonus, see if you can name their responsibilities, what position they coach.
Yeah.
That will help tell you how much coaching staff turnover we've seen this year.
Yeah. That seems like a good place to leave it now that we've given you some homework. So thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back. I know it's been a couple of weeks since we've had a football podcast, but now we've got some news, so we're here to talk about some stuff. We're going to have Cecil Hurt back in later this week to do a basketball podcast. Oof. Who knows what's going on with the basketball team, man?
Does a team that's lost 5 in a row get into the NCAA tournament? I know they'll have the SEC tournament between then, but
I don't know.
Maybe he's smarter than I am. He can answer that.
Last I saw, I think the projections today had them like 66% chance of making the tournament. So
they got Florida at home, then they got to go to A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And then
SEC tournament. Yeah.
Which generally, if you've looked at the brackets at all, that doesn't, unless you win the thing, doesn't change your projection too much. So.
Yeah. Their problem, and you know, we're kind of eating into the
this is overtime.
Yeah. The problem has been that they went through a stretch where they were fourth in the conference, and then they started losing to the teams that were eighth, ninth, 12th.
They're like seven or eight grouped all together, right?
Yeah, and so now they're in the middle of this big cluster, but they've lost all these tiebreakers to all these teams that they're tied to, like Arkansas.
Yeah.
That Arkansas win game would have been big if they'd been able to win that one.
They're just not playing well.
Yeah. Still have some time to figure it out. In any event, if you've been listening for this long, we appreciate it, you guys. If you can give us a like on iTunes or leave us a rating or a review, we appreciate that. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for listening to everybody. Until next time, I'm Ben Jones, and this is the Bama Beat.